Welcome to Sunrise Life, the podcast where we have deep conversations with fellow traveling models. Today, I have Ivory Flame on the line. Say hello.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you so much for taking the time to do this podcast with me. I'm excited.
Yeah, me too. I have been listening over the last few months. I've listened to quite a lot of them. It's been really, really cool to like hear so many models and stuff that I've known about for years and like hear their sort of different trajectories in the modeling industry.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for doing it and for inviting me.
It's fun. It's fun to get to meet people over the phone, I guess. And it's very interesting to see how many similarities and differences we have.
Yeah, but yeah, it's cool. It's definitely cool to listen to all the different personalities that wind up kind of making this their living, basically, yeah. And their passion.
Yeah. And you're on the other side of the world from me right now. We were just talking about that before we like officially started. I think that's so cool.
Yeah, I'm over in England, in the UK. We were just kind of navigating the time difference earlier, weren't we? Because daylight savings time happens at a different time in the US than it does in the UK. So yeah, I think yours has just changed in the last week or so.
Yeah.
Because it changed till Sunday. And there's like a few weeks a year where it sometimes catches me out with like remote shoots. And yeah, I should have thought about that. It was fine.
You know, I didn't even think about whether or not like that area of the world had daylight savings time. I kind of, as Americans often do, assumed that we were the only ones that do that. And then I didn't even think about the rest of the world.
Well, you'd think that if they did it, they'd just do it at the same damn time, not like staggered by like a few weeks. Like, what? They're going to change it. Just like, can we all just agree?
Oh my God. Arizona in the United States doesn't do daylight savings. So part of the year it's in alignment with mountain time, and another part of the year it's Pacific time.
Yeah.
What the hell? What time is it? So how often do you travel from the UK to other places?
Well, I am not traveling as much as I used to now. I have done like so much travel over my time modeling. But in the last year or two, I've been kind of winding it down somewhat because basically I got my own house, my own mortgaged house with my partner, and we moved here in like about 18 months ago. And normally I'm like, yeah, kind of peppering my year with so many different travels here, there, and everywhere, as well as kind of local work. But since we moved, I've done a few travels here and there, but I've really consciously tried to sort of wind that down more, to spend more time at home and be a bit more grounded, and sort of try to progress more of my income based at home.
Yeah, I can get that. Like traveling all the time, it takes a lot of energy.
Yeah, it definitely does. I mean, I've loved it so much. I've modeled for 18 years now, I think it's about that, and for a huge amount of that, most of that time, I have also traveled widely, and yeah, it's amazing, and I've loved it so much, and I still love doing it, but I just knew that I wanted to try to consciously reduce it a lot, because yeah, just to try to focus it on kind of building more rhythm and habits in my kind of daily life at home, and sort of yeah, getting more of a routine. Because as you know, when you travel all the time and sort of even going to stuff in England, it's like, it's all a bit haywire and you have like crazy busy intense times and then a bit quieter lulls and then you're crazy again. It's all kind of, it's just never consistent. And obviously that can be exciting, but it's also really hard to sort of develop some groundedness and stability in your life as well if you just constantly kind of on this sort of wild goose around the world. And yeah, you're sort of constantly putting the puzzles together all the time of where you're next going to be and contacting all these different people and all of that. So it's been interesting, this sort of shift to trying to kind of live that more grounded life. It's definitely not easy to go from doing the kind of traveling model, busy thing around the world to kind of being more still. That is definitely like a massive transition that I've kind of has thrown up lots of stuff for me and been like harder than I anticipated in some ways. But I feel like I'm kind of getting there. It just takes a while. Which, you know, you're used to a certain rhythm of life, even if that's very erratic. Like that's what you're used to for so long. And then you try and be more, more still. It's like, it's a weird transition.
I know what you mean, because when you're traveling, it's like a lot of the energy and focus is on, you know, the traveling that you're doing and like, what time do I have to wake up tomorrow to get to my shoot the next day? Like, how am I going to get there? Like, I'm not familiar with this city. And it takes away a lot of the energy and focus from what's actually going on in your life.
Yeah.
You know? So there was a period of my life where I was stuck in a toxic relationship and I was like, traveling so intensely. I was gone for 2 weeks at a time and then back for 2 weeks at a time. Yeah. And I felt like I was in this cycle of when I was traveling the first like week, I was like, yeah, I'm traveling, this is awesome. And then the second week, I was like, dang, this is like, I need to go back home and rest. And then I'd get home and be like, oh, this is great. I'm just going to sit on the couch and edit photos. But then by the second week of being at home, I was like, dang, I got to travel again. And I did that for like 8 years, like
back
and forth.
Yeah. And it's just sort of, I find like you can sort of wipe you out when you come back. You sort of think, I'm going to have some chill time, but you can be sort of so mentally exhausted that it's hard to sort of do the things that you might want to do at home, or like just kind of chopping, changing the rhythm up. It's kind of, I don't know, it's just hard to, like the elusive balance. Maybe there's like, maybe it's impossible to find the balance, but I'm trying to kind of like, find it on some realistic level.
Yeah. And this is kind of reminding me of something that you reminded me of before we did this call, is that we worked with this life coach who kind of helped me with this sort of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Did you end up having quite a few sessions with her?
Yeah, we did 12 sessions over the course of a few months. And I know that one of the major takeaways was about this life balance myth.
Yeah.
And I came to realize that balance in life is a myth.
Yeah.
And that coach really helped me figure that out, and that it's okay to not be totally organized all the time, which I resisted that idea. I was like, oh, I have to have all my dresser drawers look neat. My room's a mess. My files on my computer are a mess. My emails are a mess. Like, my life's a mess. And she's like, but is it working for you? I'm like, yeah, it works the way that I'm doing it. And she's like, well, then you're fine.
Yeah, she's so awesome. Should we give her a shout out? I think we should. A life coach, Beth Creedon. That's who me and Christy are talking about. That I worked with her actually for, I think I had sessions with her for at least a few years back in, like, I think it was a couple of years, maybe it was before the pandemic, maybe like 2019 or something like that. But I started sessions with her and she helped me hugely. And she's a fantastic life coach for anyone needing some help with like focus and direction in what you want to kind of like. If you've got blocks that you're trying to push through, or you're trying to sort of change up your work or your personal elements of your life, and you just need someone to like really help you visualize things and like ask the important questions to sort of, I don't know what you, what will really kind of be rewarding for you in the long run.
And for being a full-time freelancer, I found her method of helping really, really helpful, because it wasn't just like she was giving me advice on what she thought I should do. She was evaluating like how I was feeling and how I was being, and then asking me how I wanted to feel and how I wanted to be showing up for in my life, and visualizing what I felt would be the ideal way of life for me, and then, you know, taking my own action. And like, she almost frustratingly, to my point, because I like, you know, somebody giving me steps, but the whole thing was, if she were to give me the steps, then it wouldn't be as valuable to me. She aided me in creating my own steps, figuring out how I wanted to live my life, which was challenging, but very helpful.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I think that's what I found too. She helped you to help yourself. Sort of thing. Like initially, you maybe want someone to just like, just tell me what to do, tell me how to do it. But like, yeah, I think she really gets like right in there in the nitty gritty of you and kind of helps you to aid yourself in the right steps, I can say. But yeah, I booked her because I just found that I was kind of floundering in things myself with directions that I wanted to take my work, and that I wanted to progress some other things like my photography as well. But I was just doing so many different things, and there was quite a lot going on in my personal life and had been, and I was facing some challenges, and I just was like, this is too much to do alone. I'm just gonna sort of let myself be like, it's okay to need help. It's okay to need someone to like give you some guidance, because I think that it's so easy to like want to try and do it all yourself, or it's self-improve and manage like alone. But it's just like all the sort of successful big business people of the world, like they all obviously have like sort of people advising them and helping them and coaches and all sorts. So like, it's totally natural to be like, okay, hands up, this is just too much for me and I need someone to really support me in this.
Yeah,
it was definitely such a huge help for me, and like lots of my, it was hard going. Like, I found that my sort of progress did take time, but it was so worth it, because my sort of self-esteem and belief in myself and sort of pushing outside the comfort zone, it really kind of skyrocketed after a while with her. So yeah, it was really, really useful.
That's amazing. Yeah. And like, what we're doing, like just traveling freelance models, like this is, you know, kind of extremely niche, uncharted territory for like mostly everybody. You know, there's nobody has like a, you know, a footpath for like how to do this. There's models that make up like courses where you can learn stuff and get shortcuts, but still we all have to, you know, evaluate whether or not what we're doing is even fulfilling for us, you know, because if we're not happy in our modeling, in our photos and how we're showing up for the world, like it's going to be a drag, like, and that's a big deal for like a creative person. So yeah,
I think that it's like you can have so much on all the time that you've got to respond to, that you end up kind of just dealing with the surface level stuff all the time, and the kind of deeper things and the deeper changes that you might need to work on in your goals or just the way you want to shape your life and your work. It sort of falls to the wayside, and before you know it, sometimes in our schedules and the travel through the year, like another year can go by and another year, and you sort of think, these things I wanted to do and I've still not kind of got stuck in, because you're always kind of like fighting small things and just kind of keeping above the surface. Like, especially if I got stuff going on as well, it's just, you kind of need some help to get to those bigger things. With the life coaching, I feel like I made some really great progress, but then also the pandemic came along and all of that was like another sort of whirlwind of stress and busyness, and then, you know, you can sort of derail your progress a little bit, and it'll be good to kind of circle back to some of the things that I was working on with her, I think.
Yeah, and us talking about Beth Creedon is also making me want to email her again, because I haven't followed up with her in a long time, and now I feel bad. So yeah, I'll hit her up. She's a great and so kind and so genuine, and she truly cared for what was going on in my life and
yeah,
how she helped me.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. So kind of rewinding a little bit for our listeners, and I guess for me too, I'd like to hear about how you first got into modeling.
I first got into modeling by kind of accident when I was at university. I was studying fine art at university, and I had a part-time job at the Body Shop, the skincare and beauty company. And I used to like work at some local fashion shows doing the makeup for the models, because the Body Shop that I worked for was like a family-run business rather than the company-run one, and it did all this kind of stuff in the community. And so we did some local fashion shows where one of the organizers saw me, and she said, "Oh, I've had a redhead like drop out of a photo shoot. Would you be able to do it?" You know, she said, "I think you'll be great. I've never done something like that before, apart from like a bit of self-portrait work on my course, but yeah, not done proper modeling." So my first photo shoot was actually like a proper full-on photo shoot with makeup artist and styling, and it was for a magazine, and it was like in Oxford. That's where I was living at the time. And then that photo shoot like came out in, you know, the publication came out, and so I had like a term sheet from it. And somebody else that I met through the Body Shop also told me about like the model websites that you can join. Actually, they first told me about this really, because this was like 2006-ish, and they told me about this website called Hot or Not.
Yeah,
so I thought we were under that. Yeah, it's just a silly website where you could join and put up a picture, and then people rate you from 1 to 10. So super silly. But like, then someone on there contacted me and said, "Have you heard about Model Mayhem and some other model websites that they gave to me?" Like, there was a one in the UK at the time and everything. And so I joined some of those, and then just like put up a few webcam pictures and some strange self-portraits that I'd taken on my fine art course. And then just lots of people messaged and said, "Oh, your look is really kind of reminiscent of the pre-Raphaelites or like Gustav Klimt models." And they were basically referencing lots of art that I had like long admired and sort of had some of that kind of stuff on, you know, like postcards of it and whatnot that I collected from going to galleries like when I was younger, because I was also very into art and my parents were as well. So I was just like, "Oh my gosh, I never thought of myself as a model, but these people are saying that, you know, I could fit right into this kind of genre that I love anyway." So I was really kind of taken aback but excited by it. And then I just did what most people do, and they do TF stuff to begin with, like time for images and whatnot, and then just built up my portfolio, and then it just snowballed, and then suddenly it's like 18 years later and I'm here.
Wow. That's awesome. So right at the beginning, you were starting off in the university, and then like that led to a magazine shoot kind of right off the bat.
Yeah. And
then straight from there to hotornot.com.
But yeah, you can.
Yes. And we have Model Mayhem. I forgot about Hot or Not. I think that I posted something on it. I don't know, I was probably 15 or 16 or something like that. But yeah, I never had anybody email me about modeling from there, but that's cool that somebody reached out to you about that from hotornot.com.
I know, it's like, it's a bit of a funny link, but it's what happened, so I should mention it. You never know how they, I don't know who that person was, but they kind of helped shape the trajectory of my life.
And that's awesome that like when people are giving you like their thoughts about how you look, like the pre-Raphaelite imagery from the art that you were already inspired by, and you were like, yeah, that's my niche. Like, that's so special and rare, because so many models get into modeling and then, you know, they end up like kind of falling into glamour, because that seems to be like where a lot of photographers who are hiring want to shoot, like Playboy style stuff and whatnot. And then from there, they're like, wait, I actually have these other like types of modeling that I want to do. So do you feel like you ever had to deal with other genres that you weren't maybe as inspired by, that like early on in your career, where you had to kind of reroute yourself back to the artistic styles that you love?
I feel like I've been quite lucky throughout my modeling career that I've got to do a lot of stuff that I'm really passionate about. Of course, sometimes when you start out, you do like work with people where you just sort of like, I don't know, do something on a plain white background, and it's just kind of like boring and doesn't have much artistry to it, and or you know, there's naff lighting and whatnot, and you kind of be like, oh no, like I don't want to do that kind of stuff. But it takes you a few years to really recognize like how to hone in on the styles that work for you the best. But yeah, luckily it's been pretty rewarding experience in all. I've kind of always loved to do a range of styles though, so I've loved the sort of from the art nude stuff that I did when I was from the start really, and the sort of pre-Raphaelite classical things. But I've also loved sort of fashion and stuff that's a bit surreal or weird or kind of like interesting themes, and I always like sort of details and decoration and colors and costume. And so I've kind of tried to always do a range, but I guess there's definitely like a style that people would mostly associate with me, with the kind of classical, romantic, soft and dream kind of looks, which like they really suit me well and I enjoy them a lot. So I love doing all that, but I do definitely like challenging myself with different looks and themes as well.
Yeah, I really like that gothic theme that I saw. You recently posted something with the makeup like pouring down your face.
Yeah, I did that. I did that recently. I did a sort of, I've got like a home setup in my house where I sort of about a week of every month, I kind of turn it into like a home studio and remote set, so people that I kind of know well, they can come shoot in person, or I can do remote stuff, and I kind of do just general bespoke, you know, whatever kind of style they want to do, we can shoot it. But then occasionally I'll put on these themes where, you know, I'll get my inspiration together and make a mood board and just think, oh, what do I want to kind of do more of and explore more with the theme and look. So I thought, I've been kind of had that one in my mind for a while, and I was like, yeah, just go for it. And even though it's not really very seasonal, I'm like doing like a sort of a gothic kind of dark style look in like the middle of spring. But
I think any time could be Halloween, right?
Yeah. That's but yeah, cool. It was really good. It was very fun. I had fun kind of sourcing all the different props and like some more outfits that just really suited it, like some vintage gowns and whatnot, and jewelry and like interesting candelabras and stuff that I got from like Facebook Marketplace, you know, and you find weird and wonderful props and you're like, well, that's exactly what you need to get the black wool. Yeah, it was super fun.
You mentioned earlier that your parents were also like, you know, loved art and things like that.
Yeah.
Did they have any kind of resistance to you getting into nude modeling close to the beginning of your career?
No, they've always been pretty chill and easygoing with it. Like, my mom was always like a big advocate and supporter of it all, and you know, interested to see the work. And I think like early on when you start off and you maybe do a little bit, like I did a bit of stuff that was a bit more glammy maybe, and I know she was that mad about that side of things, but, you know, it wasn't sort of, you know, pretty easy going with it all. And then my dad, like, yeah, he's always been supportive, but sort of, like, oh, I think you think when I once had a, I was in an exhibition by an artist that I worked with, that he made huge paintings out of like graffiti art, like graffiti spray paint, and did these incredible pre-Raphaelite inspired paintings. And I got invited to that kind of show opening, and my parents came in for that. And there was like this giant picture of me and nude on the wall, and he told me that someone came up to him and was like looking at the picture. He said, "Oh, that's my daughter." You know, it was just like so nice that he was proud of me. But yeah, he's always been supportive. So there's not really been any problem. I think they just wanted to make sure that I was happy and safe and like, you know, not going to get into trouble or something. But yeah, I'm lucky in that regard. And I know that not everyone has that experience. So
yeah, and that's really special. That story like just gave me a visual of that. That's really cool. You get like the support of your parents, like that means everything.
Yeah.
I want to take a short little break to tell you about Model Society. ModelSociety.com is a website dedicated to featuring figurative fine art photography for models and photographers. What makes them different than other portfolio hosting websites is that some of those other websites will still host kind of tacky photography or exploitative photos. Model Society screens all of their contributors for quality and authenticity, so you only get the best of the best on there. If you're not a photographer or model, you can still enjoy and appreciate Model Society because they also have newsletters and magazines featuring their best work and new articles each week. Check it out, modelsociety.com. I will also include a link to Model Society in the show notes. All right, now back to our show. So I have this part on my podcast that I call the photo shoot fail of the week.
Oh, yeah.
It's an opportunity for you to tell an entertaining story about something crazy that happened to you while you're modeling. It could be something crazy, like the photographer was crazy, or maybe something happened at the photo shoot location that was crazy, or something like that. But what's one of your crazy photo shoot stories?
Well, I think I was going to maybe tell you about, it was a darker experience that I had rather than like a funny one. Obviously, there's lots of interesting experiences that we can have over the years, but I did have a bad experience where I encountered a photographer that recorded me, you know, secretly recorded me changing. So I'd worked with this photographer a number of times already, and he was honestly such a nice guy. He was so easygoing and just friendly and talk about anything. It was like I really had no kind of alarm bells or anything with him. And he'd even been to my house, like where I lived at the time. He'd been to my apartment and done a home shoot there. And we were doing this whole project that was like with costumes, and he was going to make a panel of images to submit to one of these like photography, you know, like these sort of competitions where you have to showcase a panel of like 18 different pictures, and it's all about a theme or something. And so he was putting a lot of work and time into this. And so we were at this really fancy kind of mansion venue that he had hired a number of times already. I already worked with him there. And I was at the end of the shoot, and I think we'd shot a little bit of nude during the day, but mostly it was kind of like this costumed narrative style, sort of like a story going through the images. And there'd been no problems whatsoever. But then at the end of the shoot, when I was packing up my stuff, I don't know how I hadn't noticed it before, because it was pretty obvious, but it was like in a box, in a cardboard box, there was a camera there was a hole cut in the box and there was the camera kind of recording through it with the light on. It was in the changing area that he had set up for me in a room.
Oh my God.
So I was just like, what on earth? Like, you got the adrenaline rushing through you because it's just such a shock and also just so bewildering. Like, what? Like, this can't be real, but it really looks like that's what it is. And so I basically got all my stuff together and I packed up so I was ready to go, you know? And he came in to pay me and then I confronted him and was like, what on earth is this? And he was sort of bumbling his way through some kind of stupid excuse about charging it, that it's, I don't know, it was really obvious that he was just making it up. And but I also couldn't believe it at the same time because he was honestly such, appeared to be such a nice guy, and it was just so out of character. He did a really stupid thing. He basically kind of erased, he formatted the card. That's what he must have done. He was fiddling around with it. He formatted it, and then he said, here, you have the memory card. Like, as if to be like, you know, there's nothing here and I'm innocent. Like, here, you can even have it. And he'd obviously wiped it. But like, most people know that if you wipe format like a card, you can still get stuff from it. Like, you can still run programs on it to get the stuff off.
Uh-huh.
And so I took that and then just like got out of there. And then I was able to, when I got home, obviously like calmed down and like rang my friend and was like, oh my God, this thing happened. But like, yeah, calmed down and then kind of looked on it and I could see that there was something there, but it wasn't letting me kind of view it. So I had to send it to another photographer friend of mine who sort of ran this program on it. And then sure enough, he said, yeah, fortunately there's pictures of you changing on there. But it was kind of great because I had the evidence. So then I went to the police and did, you know, proper full report of it. And they were very good to me. Actually, they were completely respectful and very, very helpful, like fully supportive of everything. And he was arrested and I had all his stuff taken off him, all his equipment. And then he got like 2 years suspended sentence and he got put on the sex offenders register for 5 years.
Wow.
Yeah. So that was like probably the grisly experience, but it was just the shock of it mostly, like, because I think especially as you get experience, like me and you, we could sort of sniff out if someone has bad intentions. Often you can kind of see the signs, can't you, with that, how they act or what they say or the way they kind of write their emails and stuff. But this chap was just not like that at all, and I would have recommended him to anyone. So to have such a kind of breach of trust,
yeah,
was really shocking.
Yeah, that would mess me up too. And I have had situations where I've trusted somebody and worked with them for a long time, for years, and then found out that they were doing something really fucked up. And it puts you through the ringer. It's like, wow, is my ability to gauge if somebody is having ill intentions for me, is that broken now? Because I thought that I had that figured out by this point.
Yeah.
No?
Yeah. Yeah, it did definitely kind of make me sort of, it did play on my mind for a while. Almost like, oh gosh, if he did that, then, you know, who else could, you know, you just sort of look at people in a second glance and think, you know, the people that you think you can trust. But I just sort of reassured myself that this was such a one-off and that it was like a rare occasion, because I think in general the intuition that those models have is often, you know, right, and we can gain so much experience in reading people and we see so many different characters and can recognize these things that people can say that they maybe think are kind of subtle, that are and that they'll go under our radar, but we can kind of catch on to it and be like, oh no, I've met your sort before, you know. But yeah, with this one, it did shock me. But luckily, because I have all the experience, and it was just mostly a one-off, because thankfully, I've done it for a long time, I have had a pretty small amount of the bad experiences like that. And because at least I had the evidence, I could do something with it. No, it wasn't gonna, of course, it was distressing to go through. And I think I had some other things as well that I was dealing with at the time, but I could get on with it and sort it out. But a new model, that would just put them off for life, wouldn't it? Just be so awful.
Do you think that maybe that photographer had also done that with previous shoots that you were on, where you just didn't notice?
Well, they did, when they looked at his computer, they did say that they didn't find any evidence of like other videos of me or other models, because obviously that was one of the things we were searching for. They did find some other, they found some like gross porn on his computer that he got another, like some illegal porn that he got another sentence for, you know, a heavier sentence. So they did find something else that was weird. But they didn't find any other instances of him videoing people. So it seemed like it was a one-off.
Okay.
I don't know if he just had like a moment of madness where he just said, well, he obviously was premeditated because he bought the camera and set it up, but I don't know. And I don't know why I never spoke to him again, you know, and obviously I wouldn't want to. It's just a very surreal and bizarre experience.
Yeah, that sucks. And you had been working on that project for that competition, so you were involved. Like,
I was kind of like, this, you know, you're just like, for God's sake, why do people have to spoil themselves with such ridiculous, awful behavior? Like, we could have just gone on and done this project. You could have booked me like 8 more times because it was a big project. And yet you have to mess it all up and do this stupid thing.
Yeah. I mean, if he wanted like behind the scenes, he could have just been like, hey, I want to film a little behind the scenes of the making of the thing that we're doing, and then asked you about it. But he went like the total creepy route. Like, yeah, that's creepy.
I know. Yeah, I was very bored. Thankfully for me, it's, you know, been few and far between. Now I've had to deal with weird people doing horrible things like that.
Yeah, it's good to talk about this. So I want to thank you for like having the vulnerability to bring up something like that, because, you know, nobody wants to talk about stuff like that happening to them, because it can be embarrassing or just awkward, you know. But I think it's good to know for other people that could be happening.
Yeah, and just to sort of, I know that it probably is different in all parts of the world and parts of the country, but like, just to reiterate that my experience in reporting that to the police was really positive, and they were definitely supportive, and there was no kind of like, oh, but you were posing nude for him anyway, where you were either. That wasn't even a thing. They completely sort of gave me respect and professionalism in what I did, and they kept me up to date on everything that was happening with him in the case and stuff. So that was encouraging, at least in my experience. I know it's probably not the same in everyone, but
yeah, that is actually, I mean, when I heard you say all that about how helpful the police were and how they actually cared, I was very surprised. Based on what I have heard of things happening to other models where they went to the police, it seems like, I don't know if it's a United States thing, but oftentimes stuff like that doesn't get taken care of. Like even like rape cases in the United States often just sit on the shelf for a really long time, and most of the time nobody gets convicted of anything.
Yeah, it's horrendous. I do have one other experience where I kind of spoke to the police about someone actually, but that wasn't so good. So it obviously can differ. They're definitely not always understanding and take things as seriously as they should.
Yeah, that sucks. And that's a big reason why a lot of people don't go to the cops about stuff like that, especially when it's a photo shoot where you're going to be posing nude. Like, you're looked at as a person who, you know, was asking for it or whatever they would assume, you know.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, it's an important topic. It's unfortunate. Like, people should just be respectful, right? Like, in general, like, I think don't touch the models is like rule number one in like photography 101, like page one. That should be the number one thing.
Absolutely. And you know, the more experience you get, the more you can kind of like back up for yourself if something like that ever comes up, and you can tell people straight and make sure they don't overstep. With experience, you can know what to, you know, you can put people in their place, but some things do kind of still take you aback when they happen, because if you have had mostly good experiences, which my career has, it's almost like, yeah, it just can blindside you if something
didn't happen. Yeah. That is a good thing to bring up, because I feel that too. I feel like most of my experiences with photographers these days are good, because I've been modeling for such a long time that people who are going to do creepy stuff usually don't work with me, because it's implied that I'm going to stick up for myself just because I've been doing this for a long time and I'm vocal about people not doing that kind of thing. So that it still does happen, though. Every once in a while, a photographer will try to get handsy with me, and I would think that I would have the resilience to say, hey, that's not cool in the moment. But honestly, what usually happens is I freeze up and I don't know what to say. And then later I'll just send them an email like, you were very inappropriate with me and you should never do that again. You know?
And that's good. That's still good to sort of know. It's hard to know on the spot sometimes how to react. But if you give that like criticism and feedback so they know that's definitely not acceptable, then that's still, you know, hugely useful to them. And if they, you know, hopefully it shakes them up, or, you know, if they were just like having a dumb moment, then they're like, get that reality check and won't ever do it again, hopefully. But yeah, it's definitely still helpful, even if you have to kind of mill it over and then come back later to kind of.
I understand. I think a lot of those photographers mostly work with new models, and if a new model like doesn't intuitively know how to pose themselves, and they don't know that it's not okay for a photographer to just come up and grab your arm and like grab your shoulders and like manhandle you into position, like, you know, they'll do that to models all the time. And then when they work with somebody who's not comfortable with that, then they can learn, oh, I'm making all these people uncomfortable.
Because you don't want them to be like, saying, do you mind, you don't mind if I do this, as they're doing it, they see something like,
no. Right.
Ask first, wait for an answer, and then move.
And the only time that I have really found it, like, fine is, obviously, like, if I'm in a weird position and my hair is, like, giving me a mustache or something like that, and I can't move it because I'm balancing or something.
Yeah.
And then it's like, you know, if the photographer comes up and they're like, hey, can I get that? I'm like, yes, please get it off my face. You know that feeling you get in your heart when you capture the magic, and you just get that feeling of peace when you're happy about the photo that you just created. And then suddenly all that money that you spent on your lenses and your lighting or your gear, and all the times that you've driven to a location and it didn't work out, have finally amounted to something amazing. That's a feeling I often get with underwater modeling. Everything moves differently underwater. The lighting, the fabric, the hair, it's just so ethereal and magic. If you're captivated by underwater photography, here is your sign to join me and my friend Raven Lynette in the cenotes in Mexico this coming November 9th through 13th. We're putting on an all-inclusive Be Fine Art photography adventure. Everybody gets their own room in a fancy Airbnb on the waterfront, and Raven and I will take you to amazing locations with clear, stunning water with a variety of different underwater nature locations. The early bird price is $3,100 and increases on July 31st. So make sure to get your deposit in before then. Hit me up on social media if you're interested and have questions. Okay, now back to our regularly scheduled show.
I have another part of my podcast where I ask a question that I ask everybody on the show. It's called the Rising Phoenix Era of Your Life. Talk about something in your life, whether it was related to your modeling career or not, it can be anything, where you were faced with a challenge that you had to overcome.
It's such a good question that you add. I really love it. And you were going to ask this because I've listened to your podcast, so I was trying to think, what do I focus in on? I think I'll say that it was probably when the pandemic came about. Because I'd been working for so long as a model already, I guess it was like I'd been doing it 14, 15 years at that point when the pandemic came. And I was sort of trying to really work towards getting something more solid from all the work I'd put into my modeling. You know, I was trying to build and save and wanted to get like my own place, you know, and save up for a mortgage. And I had so much work lined up that year that the pandemic came about. It was like, you know, the busiest year yet, and lots of exciting events and retreats and opportunities and travel. And then obviously, you know, we just saw all of it kind of crumble away as this pandemic turned into a really hugely serious thing that was obviously weren't going to be able to go anywhere anytime soon. And I had just been working so hard to kind of get like to a level where I could really save for this mortgage and feel like I had, you know, because I've loved my modeling all through my career, but it's definitely been a lot of passion that I've poured into it as well, and not always the best business person with it. Like I've definitely been successful in it financially, but I think maybe a lot of models can relate that if you're a creative kind of personality, then you're not always, like you said, that ordered things, or that, you know, you can still have big challenges when it comes to kind of like really sort of making your business a success and efficient, and that you're kind of getting what you deserve for all the hours you pour into it. And it can be a bit of a battle sometimes. And I feel like because I'd been doing that work with the life coach, I was really starting to get somewhere with it and really kind of progressing in a way that maybe I'd kind of been chasing my tail a bit for some previous years. But then it all started to fall away, and I was just like, oh my God, like I think that I might not be modeling full time for that much longer. And if this happens with this pandemic, then it's going to take me another kind of 2 years after it to like rebuild my income that the mortgage people look at to sort of prove that you can earn a certain amount, you know. And so I just was like, I can't let this happen. Like I can't let it all fall away and have to sort of be back at square one. Like so I got onto this remote shooting, which obviously a lot of models did, because I always do some photography and have done for a long time. I had my photography kit, and I had like experience in working like the tethered software for when I've shot like self-portraits and whatnot. So I already had like a decent amount of stuff and knowledge with it. And I just basically embraced the remote shooting and did that for the, you know, 18 months or so when the worst of the pandemic was going on in my little flat where I lived before this place. I just had like a 2 meter wide space where it had natural light, and it wasn't a really big space at all, but I just tried to be as creative as possible with everything that I had available to me. And luckily, people really embraced the remote shooting. And I was able to keep my living, you know, keep my income coming in. And then when things went kind of, I was able to travel as well. I was able to sort of do both, which really boosted my income. And I was able to still get, you know, the mortgage and get the house that we're in now. But it was a very intense time that, you know, there was so much unknown. And I know that obviously everyone has a very different experience of what the pandemic was, but I was able to kind of use my experience and just really kind of
reinvented the way you were doing things.
Just really kind of evolve what I was doing and be innovative with it. That's the word that I was thinking.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was kind of, it was intense and busy and stressful, and it was hard work mentally and physically, but I got through it and it kind of helped me, yeah, to expand my work sort of through that adversity, you know.
Wow, that's awesome that you were able to do that and just like kind of see an opportunity through like getting more and more on the remote shooting train, which I saw a lot of people doing that. And I thought about doing remote shoots, but actually have never done one. but I think, I mean, I see that other people are still doing them, like yourself, and I think like Sienna Hayes is doing them really frequently still. I think that's amazing. And maybe I will get on that train someday when I have a stable location with a strong internet connection.
Yeah, I guess that is the challenge, isn't it, with the internet? Tricky. It is a lot of hard work at first to get used to it. But once you have that experience, then it's definitely a good kind of thing to have in your repertoire of things that you can offer and just expands, you know, your clientele to be able to work with anyone like worldwide. So and I think also I'd always previously kind of thought of the job, the freelance work that I did, as quite a sort of unstable job. And you know, you sort of sometimes fall into that thing of comparing yourself maybe to the people that you went to school with, like what they're doing in their sort of proper job. How they sort of have, like, you know, salary jobs and all the perks of whatever, you know, however they work for and stuff. But so I kind of, you know, I loved what I did, but I was, I guess, thinking about it like it was quite, I guess, yeah, unstable or maybe unreliable in that way. But when the pandemic happened, it made me just really see that it was actually way more, at least from my experience, having that ability to do remote, it ended up being kind of more flexible and stronger than I had imagined. So that kind of gave me a different perspective of what I did, because, you know, some other people, unfortunately, even if you had a very sturdy job, it still could have been rocked by the pandemic. But
yeah,
when kind of artists and creative people have like a limitation, then they sort of have that strength to think outside the box and still make it work somehow.
This industry is so interesting in the way that like freelance models have created this ongoing dynamic where freelance photographers like shooting with us. And then when something happens, like the pandemic, they still want to shoot with us somehow and make it work, because they also get enjoyment out of being creative. And remote shooting seems to be like the way to continue to make it happen, so they're not just sitting there not doing their creative stuff anymore. I mean, I suppose people could like photograph their cat or whatever, but I think that I think with freelance modeling, we were lucky in that where like makeup artists and hairstylists and massage therapists and all those people that required to be in person doing in real life physical work weren't able to do that anymore. But we are lucky in the where
you. Yeah, you had your websites where you had other income coming in, that as long as you could shoot for it, then you still had something even if you didn't have your travel shoot. So that flexibility that you had built up as well allowed you to still manage, even if it was very strange in that time.
I had my Patreon, and I had actually just started an OnlyFans a month before the pandemic started, and I was living in a van, so I was sort of already set up for a worldwide pandemic, I guess. Coincidentally. Well, I think that we've had a really good episode. I usually do these for like around an hour, but is there anything else that you wanted to mention before we say goodbye?
I did want to mention to you that I have you on my lounge wall. Oh, I love a video of you on my lounge wall. It's a print by Colin Prescott of you under the water in, I think you were in Brazil. No.
Yeah.
You're in kind of like a, it looks like you're in like a cosmos or something, like a universe to me. It's like you're in some kind of seaweed and it all looks a bit murky. But it's like beautiful colors and you're kind of curled up like sort of a fetus position. And it's just such a beautiful print. And I got that with some of the art on my wall, which I'm really.
I know exactly what photo you're talking about. And so that was a really, really, really unique location. There's an area in Brazil, and I'm going to butcher the pronunciation of it. It's called Lens National Sand Dunes Park or something like that. And it's miles and miles of white sand dunes. And a lot of them have little pools of water in between the sand dunes. So we were like, I wonder what it looks like underwater. And that stuff, the stuff that's in the water, it's like, I think it's just like stringy black algae. It was like gooey. Yeah. It wasn't seaweed. It was like just black stringy shit. We don't even know what it was.
You did well to do that, because like I've done quite a lot of underwater work over the years, and I know you've done a ton and you're absolutely incredible at it, but I would really struggle and have struggled sometimes doing stuff in water where it's like murky at the bottom, or it's kind of like a bit, like there's weeds or like filthy sort of soft gooey floor or something, like I don't know if I'd have managed it with that all kind of tangling around my feet. Not freaked out at all, or are you pretty chill with that kind of stuff?
So when I first started like underwater modeling, I was in this area of my life where I felt like when I swam in a lake, if a piece of seaweed touched me, I would freak out. But so far, nothing freaky has bit me. I mean, little fish bite me sometimes, but I haven't stepped into like gooey stuff that has done me wrong yet, and knock on wood. It does still kind of freak me out, especially when you step into something and it's really soft and your foot goes into it for a long time. You're like, oh my god, what's down there?
It's just like our imagination, isn't it, that you sort of think it's just, I think it's just an innate thing that anything that's a bit dark and there could be something in there, even if you know there's not, but it's still hard, I think, to see yourself through it. Like an underwater work can definitely be a challenge from that viewpoint, that you have to kind of really try to override your natural reaction to sort of be fearful or apprehensive about being down there in the sort of potentially dark, or having all the kind of the pressure of holding your breath and needing to kind of move yourself in a certain way, and then have like stuff in your back of your mind coming through. But that shot, it's just so beautiful. I love it. Like, it's just such a gorgeous representation of, like, I don't know, it looks like creation, you know, sort of the creation of a sort of nebula, and then this little human figure in the center.
So cool. Well, I feel flattered that you have a photo of me at your place.
Yeah.
So cool. I should get more prints of people and put them up on my wall.
Yeah. Well, that's why I've been enjoying having space and having more space. Like, I've still got quite a lot to put up, and I still actually haven't got one of me up yet. Like,
oh,
I don't know if you, like, you know, as models ourselves, sometimes we don't always put, like, our own work on the walls, because it might seem like it's a sort of, I don't know, I think when you're younger, it feels like it's a bit self-absorbed or something to put it on your wall, or that it might feel weird, or that people visiting might be like, well, that, you know, if it's a nude one, they might find it a bit strange. But now I'm kind of, I'm old enough to be like, no, I want to put myself on the wall for sure.
Yeah, do it.
Trying to decide which out of like how many years of shoot for what to put up, but yeah, I need to decide that.
Have your fans vote.
Yeah,
it's really cool. All right, yeah, this has been really good.
Now, it's been lovely to talk with you. I wish I could chat more with you. Yeah, I love your work, and podcast is wonderful, and just bye. Keep doing great stuff, and I'll keep listening to the other people you have on.
Thanks. Awesome. Cool. All right. Well, I'll be in touch on Instagram after we finish this recording. And until then, enjoy the rest of your evening.
Thank you so much. Take care.
Bye-bye. I just wanted to thank you so, so much from the bottom of my heart for listening to the Sunrise Life podcast. I am so grateful every time somebody comments or sends me a DM saying that they love the show. If you would like to help other people find out about the Sunrise Life podcast, it would be immensely helpful if you could subscribe on whatever platform that you regularly listen to Sunrise Life on. And if you could leave a rating, that would make me smile so hard. Thanks for listening, and here's back to your regularly scheduled show.